So my name's Sue Bergen, and I'm happy to moderate this session. We thank you for coming. It's session 267, A Modified Faith, Mormon Life in an Assisted Living Facility. Before we begin, we ask you to silence your cell phones. This is being recorded. You can purchase recordings after the presentation at the registration desk on the main floor, of which there's only one floor. We encourage you to purchase also Sunstone merchandise or make a donation. Sunstone needs it and values your donations. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework. And then about this presentation. The lived Mormon faith is built around the individual, their family, and their connection to their local ward or branch. But what happens to a person's faith when they are physically cut off from both their family and ward? This session examines the lives, struggles, and faith journeys of a dozen members living in a Mesa, Arizona assisted living center, focusing on their wide range of spiritual and physical needs and how they modified the rituals of their faith, the sacrament, family home evening, missionary and temple work, to accommodate their living situation and create vibrant new spiritual communities. David Kramer, our presenter, was raised Lutheran and then baptized into the LDS Church in 2014, the day after his 30th birthday. As he navigates his way as a single adult convert, he finds himself drawn to serve, fellowship, and befriend the individuals and communities that can feel similarly out of place in the church. He graduated from the University of New Orleans in 2005 with a degree in history. And the rest of the time is David's.
Hello. Thank you for coming to my decidedly super sexy conference topic here at Sunstone. You can tell kind of from my background, this is my very first time sort of presenting here, and honestly, I had no idea what I was really getting myself into, but it's always kind of a conference society that sort of was meaningful to me. I wanted to connect, and I know that this topic of, you know, threads in the Mormon tapestry, and as I was reflecting upon just the experience that I was going through at the moment, it sort of like really felt compelled me to sort of tell this story. So I did plan on starting just kind of touching on myself, as didn't quite realize there'd be a lovely kind of background that I'd even forgot that I had written. It sort of packed in me there for a second. And once again, as I mentioned, you know, myself was baptized into the church about 4 years ago. And I wanted to bring up myself, not to center myself in the story, but just to acknowledge that the experience that I am sharing are very specific. It's through the lens of myself as an interpreter. As you had said, like, my background is history. My undergraduate was in history, and especially like I'd focus on microhistory. If anyone is familiar with the study of history, it's kind of like looking at the very small, finite, like very small personal details, and examining how those stories are told and individual experiences through that lens, and kind of realizing that the personal is universal. Take a seat. Welcome. Oh, I can stand closer. Yes, I can easily make that accommodation. But my background, yes, it's in history and the microhistory, and just kind of understanding that that individual lived experience is universal in its own way. You know, kind of need an understanding. I'm not trying to make any grand assessments of what all people in these facilities need. The experience that I'm sharing is like either things that I've experienced firsthand or firsthand from my multiple years of service in these facilities and among these people, and then also augmented with more recent interviews that I've made with many of these members that I have done since kind of having this presentation. And also, sup, Sister T, I'm just doing that to embarrass this lovely lady right here who was one of the missionaries that taught me my first lesson and then was subsequently there with me. Sorry. But for my further background for how I relate, how I got involved into this experience and the experiences of Lithic Quickness as a living facility. So shortly after I was baptized, about a year, I was called into a family ward, and then I was called into the Elders Quorum Presidency there. And the primary responsibility that I was given, sorry, is this still loud enough? Am I?
I can hear another.
A little bit, yes. You want me to talk louder and I can help? So, when I was called into the Elders Quorum Presidency within that ward, and my primary responsibility was that of being setting up weekly sacrament meetings at an assisted living facility. So it's within our ward boundaries, and so it had just gone from previously they had had first, no sacrament meetings, maybe monthly, then shortly after that, monthly sacrament meetings, and then with my calling, and also within that, our Elders Quorum Presidency was a bit of a dumpster fire. So, and I myself, recent convert, kind of weird, uncomfortable. It gave me a place to, like, focus my energies, and in the same ways, not the same ways, in similar ways that I felt maybe out of place, uncomfortable trying to make my own way within the church. It then sort of paralleled the experiences of these members, and it sort of gave me a very clear, direct way to serve. And so through that and through this, I just have felt compelled to kind of share these stories and experiences with the blessings of the members. And so I'm going to kind of go into a three-part experience. One is just the sacrament meeting, so it was the genesis of this. And even as I was kind of doing this presentation, I sort of viewed it as the crux of it, and then I, upon further reflection, realized that it was not really the most important part of the story. And then I'm going to go into individual experiences of members, and then lastly, kind of challenges and needs to address for these specific people, and there's an element of very specific needs, but I think they are really relatable to the larger breadth of community of people with special needs, not even just in assisted living facilities, but just people with struggles within the church and elsewhere. So, yeah. That's just a comment in one of the interviews that I did within our sacrament meetings. We had a very regular organist who was there about weekly, very much like she was there more often than we were, and I spoke to her, I would often kind of come back to her on this topic, and one of the things she always went back to is that there was a really strong spirit here, speaking, of course, about those sacrament meetings that we would do within the facility. So just an overview of kind of the structure that we would do for meetings. It went from being, you know, have a few elders, tell them to go over there, toss some bread at some people, give them some water, then say a prayer and leave. And when I first started doing this and really spoke to the members and got a sense of what they really needed, what they were looking for this experience, one of the things that really came out in those conversations was the need for that structure of an actual meeting. They were missing that. They miss a sacrament and they love the sacrament, and a lot of them would say that just having the sacrament in and of itself would be meaningful. But once they have, it's kind of a Maslow's hierarchy of spiritual needs. Once they would have that sacrament taken care of, then it's like, but we also really need the music. Like, and it would start with, I would be playing songs on the phone. Like, I would play the first verse and we would kind of sing along because I had no idea what I was doing. And then it progressed to, there's an organ there. And let's actually play songs here. And then it became, why are we just singing the first song? And honestly, probably when I was starting to do that, it was just because I was, you know, we didn't always have music, people didn't have music, and it's just like, oh, it's just more easy, convenient for people, just sing the first hymn, that's the first verse of the hymn, it's what people remember. But I know it was very important for members to have, like, full songs of that, just having that familiarity, that regularity, even though most of them didn't know the additional verses. We brought hymnals, but for many of them, like, their eyesight wasn't good enough to be able to look at it. But just having it, I think it was very important for them to not feel like just the bare minimum was being done. And we would also then bring families. And one thing that I stressed that was very important was having both elders, not just men, but also having women talking in each service and having like an equal balance. And I know that was super meaningful for the residents, and also having children and had a connection to children and actual families very much had a very big part of making them feel really accepted and a part of the ward when they could not before. And within that, the people that would come to assist really stressed to them to actually give original spiritual talks. One of the things that a member pointed out to me is that sometimes people would come and they would just, their spiritual thought would be, I heard this thing in Elders Quorum. Like, we were talking about this in Elders Quorum. And that sort of, it had the impression to them of, this isn't something meaningful for us. This was just kind of, once again, sort of the bare minimum. They have to come and say something. These sacrament meetings were happening right after our three-hour block. So it was literally the last thing that these people were hearing, and they were just regurgitating those elders quorum lessons to them. And it was just a very kind of clear symbol to them that this lesson wasn't really intended for them. They were just getting the scraps from what was the other thing. And then one last thing, which that I kind of get into, I guess not really the last thing, but the resident assignments. And this was one of the, within the first month or so, one of an item that some of the members themselves started coming up to me and asking is like, can we be assigned? Can we give talks? Can we actually have church assignments? Because this is something that they would not really have otherwise, would not have callings. They realized that they were missing out on the structure of callings, being assigned to pray at church, being assigned talks. And though I should specifically note that this is one thing that is very, very much on a case-by-case basis, because for some residents, just the thought of being assigned to give a spiritual talk or prayer was very stressful and stress-inducing to them. So it's something that I think was really important to them, but also it's something that is definitely not a something for all people. And for the element of the testimony meetings, we would keep that on the regular schedule, and it ended up being one of the more spiritually profound moments, and I think the most meaningful is having actual testimony meetings. And it also ended up being a really funny way that there were instances when people would come, when people would come and give talks, but they really were not kind of those regurgitated elders quorum lessons that I would be talking about. The organist, who is lovely and went from being a very kind of timid personality about a couple of years ago to someone who would frequently say, I don't want to tell the priesthood what to do, but, which would always kind of break my heart every time that I heard it. But then, like recently, just a few months ago, there was one of those lessons, and a regurgitated Elders Quorum lesson, and it was very much not spiritually fulfilling, and she turned that meeting spontaneously into an open testimony meeting, because those people were not getting the spiritual fulfillment that they really needed in that sacrament meeting, and she took it upon herself to then be like, we're going to give this people more, and it's like she heard the lesson, and I was there. At this point, I was no longer part of the Elders Quorum presidency, and I was just kind of there as a fly on the wall. And this has happened, and then she kind of turned to the rest of the people after this very disappointing spiritual thought was given. And it was like, and does anybody else have a testimony they would like to share? And we turned it into a spontaneous, fast kind of testimony meeting, and it was very lovely and beautiful. So, and one other element that I think this does rely on is when I talked about a strong core of dependable resident regulars, this is something that has even gone through a flux just in the 2 years since I started, and it's kind of a pretty natural process due to health concerns, unfortunately. Whereas it's kind of been a consistent group, but these are people that 2 years hence and some of them have experienced recently like very bad falls, just their health has gone bad in negative ways. Health has gone bad in significant ways, I should say. And there is an element of those physical needs really negatively impacting the, from what an outsider, what they would say, like spiritually impacting the spirit in the room, which is not really a fair thing to say because it's just people at different levels. I think it really affects the expectations that you need to have going into it. So that meant to kind of cover the testimony meetings, which again, as I was sort of starting to do this presentation, was thinking it would be the most significant part. But as I sort of started digging deeper into what the actual individual experiences of members, realizing that this is an important structure and it gives a structure to the week and allows a place for connections to occur. But when we start talking about the actual individual experiences of the members, I think there's something that's much deeper that they end up craving, and that would be really community. And sacrament meeting is a very obvious, easy way to see that community come together. But when I look through the rest of the week, how residents really find comfort, find spiritual comfort, find hope, versus also then how they find, at the opposite end of the spectrum, just pain, discouragement. It really comes down to like community, sense of connections with people. So I love this was a direct quote from one of the residents as she was talking about it. And if you can't picture this, she also says it in the most delightful Southern accent from Georgia. And she's extremely outspoken in kind of the best ways, and it's very lovely. So one of the things that we kind of hit upon was what residents would do themselves just to bring the spirit into the home, and decorations is a big part of it. But even before that, this was a quote that I had when talking to one of the Relief Society leaders, and she was actually one of the people that was most fundamental in getting the push for these weekly sacrament meetings to start. And I'm not sure if everyone can hear, but it's entering their homes is a trust issue. You're entering into their private space, but they can't even control who comes in. And this is an aspect of this that I very much did not even, I took for granted, especially when I was first happening, and realized it in subtle ways, but this kind of quote that later on helped to put it in perspective, because I would say words and I would realize I would cause offense as I would be talking to people and be like, okay, do you need me to help take you to your room? And I don't know if people are familiar with the structure of assisted living facilities, I'm sure probably all of us are. There's a big difference between calling something someone's room and calling something someone's home. And this is their home, and it's their personal space, and unfortunately, they don't really have the control over it. Like, many of them aren't even able to lock their doors because of needing for people to come in. And people just freely come in willy-nilly, and they let them go, and they don't. It's their inner space, and it's a hard thing for them to do, and it's something that I myself completely took for granted until kind of like realizing just these subtle ways of causing like legitimate offense and heartbreak and kind of rubbing that fact into their face of you're not living in a home, you're just living in a room. And I noticed that for myself, just making a change to the words that I use would help to alleviate this. And this sister within the Relief Society who made the statement, she would go even further. And she's now, whenever like elders are coming, if they're like passing the sacrament to people's individual rooms because they're not able to make the meetings, she always makes sure to go with them so she can kind of announce herself. She can go in, check them beforehand, make sure they're well clothed, make sure they're clothed, if they're on the bathroom, just helping them, not being creating a situation of like, oh, you're on the bathroom, I'm so sorry. And it's kind of like when you're embarrassed, you increase the embarrassment for them. And then as opposed to just like, hey, I'm here. Do you need help? Let me help you. And it's a very subtle thing, but it's, when you think about it, your home, it's really, it's where they spend most of their lives. And so bringing the spirit into the home is a big thing. And, you know, using decorations, this is one example of, this is actually at a different facility from a member who lived in the initial facility went to, but then she had, her health went even more. She had a stroke, I believe, and then had to go to like an even more intensive care unit. So she's actually, this is in a room where she's sharing the room with someone else. And so she just has like a corner to herself. And this is kind of what she has done to help create that space. And part of pretty much the only decoration she has in the room, but obviously the first presidency, and then I think in the picture of Jesus, a couple pictures of Jesus, and then some family. And then this is another example from a couple different residents, just kind of the decoration they do. Really, like, aside from Jesus, and then the families are forever. It ties into the resident that has that, the families are forever. I know one of her most important things to her, and ways that she really helps to live out her faith, is doing family history. And it's something that's obviously not universal for most of the residents. They are very different. They have very different physical limitations as to what they can or can't do with technology. But she is able to get on the computer and do family history. And that's probably one of the things that she does most, is to really feel that connection to church and to the gospel, to living the gospel. And then it's just some more examples that I saw of people's house. And the quilt that I really like, because this is an example where on its surface it seems like it's, you know, just you have elements of Christ, you have spiritual elements to it. But when asking her about it deeper, that actually the most meaningful part to her about it isn't so much, you know, it's the fact that it's spiritual, it's Christ, it's the nativity, it's beautiful. But what is really meaningful to her when I ask her about it is that it was gifted to her from a friend. And it's kind of a common theme in a lot of these sort of modifications that people do, or how they live their space, what they do. There are spiritual elements to it, but in so many ways, like, the spiritual elements seem like a way to access their connections to friends, to family. And it's like those connections to the people they're with, it's in some ways it's kind of impossible to separate the two, but it's like you can't have one without the other. And so I think that kind of quilt helped to really bring that example home. And that continues when there are some other residents that what they do to really be able to feel like they're living out their faith on a daily basis is writing out testimonies. This takes different forms. There's one resident who actually handwrites them. I have a couple examples from her. There are handwritten ones. There are some residents that will write them, share them on Facebook. And that person had said that they had one, they posted on Facebook, and one of their, I think, their sons or grandchildren that was no longer active in the church had liked the post. And that connection of it, like, that's, she would like write posts because that's kind of her way of, you know, of missionary work. It's her way of reaching out, sharing her faith with her family, to people that have left the church or people that are struggling with the faith, and sort of having even just that connection of a like on Facebook. She was still raving about it months later. And it's kind of interesting ways that people will connect and find meaning in that. And then this is another example that she had written. It's actually her obituary that she is writing for when she passes away. And going through, connecting to her life story, her family, everything. I haven't quite gone through and actually, like, transcribed it or anything, but I think I need to do that in the future for when her family, make sure her family is aware of it. But yeah, it's, sorry, I I have a bit more of a personal connection to these. So, and the same ways that kind of like these written testimonies work out. For, another example is a member that wrote their testimony of the Book of Mormon, and they similarly they had moved on to a different facility, but there was someone that they had talked to, or someone that wasn't a member that they had talked to the Book of Mormon about, and that resident she had like she wrote it on her phone in the notepad and or the. In the iPhone notes, and she asked if she could, she sent it to me, and then asked if I could print it out and take it to this other resident. So it was like a combination of writing the testimony, that connection to other people, and it was missionary work within that. And on the same thing, that same theme, missionary work is again something that actually takes place on a fairly regular basis. I know within this one facility, within the past 2 years, there was a couple members that were baptized themselves. I know this is a resident, and the missionary on the left is the first missionary in this conversation here. When I spoke to them, there had actually been a transfer, but it kind of highlighted what I would say a bit of some ethical concerns when it comes to missionary work in these facilities. 'Cause again, with the theme of connections, and there is definitely there's a realm of, I'm trying to think the best way to put this. So, like, BJ here, who read, is reading the Book of Mormon, and I spoke to her about her conversion experience, what led her to do it, and as she put it in her own words is, well, I was reading the Book of Mormon, and it would kept on saying that I needed to repent and be baptized. And she's like, I kept reading that, and so I figured I needed to repent and be baptized. And that's kind of is a very lovely example, I would say, and kind of the most conventional example, but there are ways that this has gone into, and there's also someone I wasn't able to talk to directly myself, but this kind of at a separate facility that has since moved into our ward boundaries is a man who lives in these facilities and has actually, I think, has proselyted and led to 5 baptisms, just himself doing missionary work directly with other residents, which in some ways is kind of, I think, what we think about when we would think of the happy path of missionary work in an assisted living facilities. There are also things that what I would consider like areas of concern, as I have heard from other people with workers at these facilities being the people to start the conversation about the Book of Mormon, as they're like professional working there in a professional capacity, and when they're working with the residents, being I'd be interested in the Book of Mormon, and like I don't know the genesis. I wasn't able to dig deeper into that, but it is something that definitely raised a red flag in my own mind. Now, just into kind of the issues of needs and challenges. Once again, this is a great quote from that Relief Society leader, and she said that the thing that breaks my heart is closing the door behind me, and it is a very real thing. I don't know if you've had the experiences with these people and they're in the moment, but it's always that leaving afterwards when they're still there alone, and it's just, it is heartbreaking. So, for emotional and spiritual struggles, I would say very frequently this hurt and pain that they feel, rage, as it's kind of here, this notes, these are kind of some of the notes of a resident trying to work through their own pain. And what kind of pains me is that very frequently this hurt and pain becomes internalized. As they are frustrated with their situation, they are frustrated with their lack of mobility, they are frustrated with being frustrated, they have been in situations where they are not able to get the sacrament regularly, they do not feel a lack of community, they feel a lack of community, and as they deal with that and they experience very human emotions of being hurt, frustrated, and all of that, their first instinct is to internalize that as themselves, as their own frustration for being frustration. And as I'm talking to them, like trying to take that guilt that comes from that, and to help them process it and work through it is one of the most frequent and difficult struggles that I have. And it's kind of very important because they have needs and they have legitimate concerns, and it's hard for them to voice their concerns, especially to someone like myself, who then is presented them as a voice of authority, as the priesthood, as they would call it. As I said before, from another member, and it wasn't just that one member that would say it, but, you know, far be it from me to tell the priesthood what to do. And there's that fear or struggle speaking to me directly, to, and even when speaking to other priests, to like Relief Society leaders, that if these are decisions coming from the ward, we can't question it. Like, this is what's supposed to be happening, and not wanting to question leadership. And trying to give them space to question it, to be able to speak up for their needs, to raise those concerns, and to, you know, sit with them in their sorrow. It's very difficult, but it's a very important thing to do. And, you know, in a very similar way, the physical struggles, and these are also hugely impactful, and we have residents dealing with cerebral palsy, those effects, and it's easy to just see how they get, see them through the lens of the then emotional, emotional, spiritual struggles that they then contribute to, but being able to still deal with them in their own right as physical struggles is definitely a challenge, and access to blessings is important to them. It's a very, very big source of comfort to them. And yeah, it's one of those things that it also leads to then a conflict between residents, especially if they have different needs. Like, there are some residents within the sacrament meeting setting, as there are some residents that have like brain injuries that have leading to sensitivity to light, sort of eye issues. And then you have other residents that may not have those concerns or may have difficulty seeing, and then, like, just the amount of light, like whether to turn the lights on or off in a sacrament meeting, become a source of conflict and tension. And I don't have a good answer to that one, but it's just something to note. And also, perhaps even more tragically, is just that feeling of alienation. And it's the other half of connections that kind of spoke to before. This is a comment from a former bishop, and I should note that this is very specific, I think, to the assisted living center where I was at, where it is what I would consider to be on the lower rung of niceness of assisted living facilities. It's kind of one of the ones where people go there and the facility just takes their entire social security check. And that's where they live on. So very often these are people that are living here because something has broken down in their family structure. Like, they don't have family around here. Some of them just don't have children or significant others. Even another, like, for this particular resident, and you can kind of see a stark contrast in this space versus some of the other spaces of, has like no personal effects, no connections, and this is someone that has two children, one of whom was busted for selling drugs out of his house and is in prison now, and then another child with grandchildren, but that relationship has now been completely fractured because this resident, so the resident's daughter is married to a Hispanic gentleman, and the resident would say some very racist, hurtful things about him, and happened a few years ago, and sort of since then, they've kind of, from an outsider's perspective, when I think about it selfishly myself, it'd be like very understandable to kind of cut off this relative that is calling my spouse racial slurs. Like, I can understand it from the children's point of view, but then having to be here with this resident that is still now virtually completely alone, empty, like virtually nothing there, and just trying to sit with them and counsel them in spiritual and comfort them in a Christ-like fashion is just very painful. And yeah, I kind of wanted to make the point about this facility because, again, I do not in any way attempt to make this a universal statement on all assisted living facilities. There are many different situations why people live in these facilities, different connections with their families. But specific to the location that I spent most of my time and the experience that I have, there are people that are getting there because there's generally a large schism that has happened with their family or a lack of it. And so this is perhaps a more extreme version of that, as the bishop who was bishop when I was there and kind of helped to put this forward attested to in school when I was talking to him and interviewing him later. So, yes, I don't have any super great, this is kind of something I just really wanted to do to start a dialogue, but I would say on the top two levels are the large needs and large themes that came up as I was just, once again, talking to members again. The need for consistency and the need for dependability and reliability. Because there's an example here at our ward, they would also do like family home evenings, regular family home evenings. But it would be different auxiliary groups within the church. And it would be, you know, Monday evening, it'd be kind of at the same place. But there wasn't a single person, such as myself, that was kind of there always making sure that the trains were running on time. And so it got to the point where it would start out, be pretty regular, and then maybe once a month, no one would show up. And then it became twice a month, no one would show up. And when it gets to that point, the residents just give up. Because the effort that it takes for them to get ready, to put on clothes, to go to that space is significant. And when they do that and the people that are supposed to be there aren't there, it's just devastating to them and heartbreaking. And then, so consistency, having people that will, not so much having people that will be there consistently and always making sure it's always happening is a huge important need. And then subsequent to that, once you have that, then you can really create connections and fellowshipping. And on a last kind of more practical level, one thing that kind of came up is also need for clothes, and it's a physical need that is, for them, very much does affect their spiritual state of mind, because some of them, if they don't have proper clothes or they don't have a dress, they don't feel that they can really go to the sacrament in a way. Like, there was one gentleman that if he didn't have a shirt, like just a white shirt, even just a polo shirt, because he definitely would not be able to physically wear a shirt and tie. So if you're looking for kind of small things you can do for other people in your life, it's depending on their need level, that's something that is not often asked for, but is super helpful. And then lastly, just a kind of an anecdote that happened relatively recently that I had only heard the full story of just this past week or so. But again, in one of those fast and testimony meetings, we had one of the sisters, and she's giving her testimony, and she said, I just wanted to let you all know, and I'm very much paraphrasing here, I wanted to let you know that this is going to be my last testimony meeting here, because I'm going home. And then myself, everyone's kind of gasped, like, is she actually prophesying of her own death? And then she continued that, I'm going back to be with my family. So then it was like, then there was a collective sigh of relief of like, oh, okay, she's going back to live with her family. What none of us knew at that time was that she didn't actually have any family nearby or still living. So in that meeting, she was actually prophesying of her own death. And it was 2 weeks later, she was transferred to the hospital, was having very severe health issues. And this was a conversation that she had had with one of the members that was there comforting her in that time. And then about less than a day later, she passed away. And it's one of the just kind of the facts of life of living in this community, of working with these people. There are many deaths that happen, and in some ways it's easy to become immune to it or like expect it, but still every time it is still impacting. And yeah, I don't have a good follow-up to that, but I guess if people are having questions or concerns or their own experiences that they would like to share, you are welcome to do so now, or I can go on a bit more if you would like. More so, I would be curious of what compelled you to attend this session. Yes. Speak into the microphone.
I have a question for you. So how you've talked a little bit about how it's impacted you personally, but I'd love to hear more about that. What difference has this experience made in your life? Do you live differently? Do you, et cetera?
It has definitely helped me to not take as much for granted. the awkward bad way to put it would be like, oh, suck it up because there are other people that have it worse than you. And it's not that sort of thing. But it does definitely help to put things in perspective. And for myself, especially when I started this as a single convert with no family in the church or anything, not really sure of my own community, kind of having this other community that I could go to was just very helpful and meaningful for me, just for making me feel like I had a place in the church, a place where I was needed. That going to another ward and going to my ward, not having a calling or anything, you're just kind of there, show up, you're there kind of to be there. If you get something out of it, great. May meet some cool people, may crack some jokes, pick a fight in gospel doctrine, whatever. But this, for myself, actually gave me the place where, within the church, it was kind of the first place within the church where I actually felt needed and valued on that level for my contributions in the way that it would be like if I had been raised in a Mormon family where, you know, you're needed within your family, even if it's more egalitarian structure. But, yeah.
Been doing a really good thing. My parents have moved since March into an assisted living facility that we chose for them, and I constantly look back and think, why didn't we just get them a one-level home and someone to care for them, because it's been such a hard transition for my mom. But they're in an area in Provo, Legacy Village, which is more like the Marriott than an institution, even though my mom thinks it's an institution.
Yeah.
She really objects. But her main objections are the lack of children. Their meetings are really well organized, and our stake supplies all the leadership, and they have a two-hour session with Relief Society, and then sacrament, and then Relief Society priesthood. And sometimes the talks are from BYU wards. And so the kids that come, they go around to the rooms of people who can't attend the meeting with both young men and women taking the sacrament and a spiritual thought. So it's not just priesthood holders going from room to room. So it's really a great thing. But she still finds it really unsatisfying and unspiritual to have these women younger than she is who are assigned to, with their husbands, to this ward, going around in high heels is one of the things she says. Is, you know, apparently they're still well enough to wear high heels and fake smiles, she thinks. And they don't have a ongoing relationship, so she's had a really hard time leaving her friends. And even some of her friends are called to serve in the ward meetings, but or the branch there. But still, she's just really struggling and feels like her spirituality has suffered. Yeah. And even things like her hearing is a big barrier. The fact that the carpet is a wild pattern, like the background you had on your slides, the interlinking circles is kind of the big commercial carpet pattern that's on their room where
the
they meet.
The carpet pattern they have in the hallways
drives her
here.
Nuts. And the fact there's no art on the walls, that it's so sterile. I mean, these are all, and she's in the lap of luxury, really, compared to some of the situations you've described.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very, and something that I've actually been analyzing myself with my own grandmother is something that my parents are dealing with as recently moved into an assisted living facility up in Michigan, whereas my parents live out in Arizona. And it's kind of, again, sort of like the Marriott, a very nice facility and beautiful and lovely and sort of very different from that. But, you know, there's still those concerns. There's still those needs. I think one of the things that helped was having a few consistent regulars, myself. We have a consistent organist. And then more recently, since I have been released from presidency, and then but we've had another member from the Relief Society that has become the consistent person there. And she's there every week. And I think having that one identifiable person that people can depend on and rely on, or maybe not even one, but just like a small handful of regulars, it helps to give legitimacy for other volunteers that come through and can give help. And sort of people, residents are able to get, you know, like spiritual insight, like a Sunday school, like lessons, that sort of thing, like just a spiritual thought, get that from that person, from those people, but then they get the connections and that dependability from the consistent volunteer that's always there. And sort of having those two things, it's more manageable for that person that's there consistently. They're not having to come up with spiritual thoughts every day. It's more of a rotating cast for the other duties, but yeah, it's kind of a balance between the two. But I know another thing that I very much learned was remembering two things. Just having to learn that there is not a universal need for everybody. There is, like when I was doing home teaching, I knew what I wanted myself from home teaching, which is much more to what is now ministering. But realizing that for these people, having traditional home teaching of go there once a month, teach that lesson once a month, in addition to other needs, like there's comfort in that structure that they grew up with. And learning from them what that is and providing that to them, what the needs are directly from them, is important, as opposed to just taking a one-size-fits-all or what works for me. And the other thing that was important for me to learn, and it's kind of the lesson that if I could go back in time to tell myself when I was first starting out, I would do, is that when I would go into this space, I definitely did it with the bias of, hey, this is an assisted living facility. There's older people here. They belong in an assisted living facility. They must have always been here. It's kind of what they do, like my own personal bias. I definitely did not realize that for most of them, it was a very new experience as well. They were just arriving in these facilities. It's very new to them. They're having to come to grips with loss of their own personal autonomy, loss of their private space, loss of their home, loss of their privacy, and being able to walk them through those changes while also being able to be there for spiritual succor is also important. And it's something that I did not realize because I just sort of take for granted that they're here. They must have been here for a while. They're probably used to it by now, but most of them aren't. Most of them were just there a month or two before I got there. So, yes. Anything else? Other questions?
One of the threads that's kind of run through the whole thing is the residents having a sense of agency. I just wondered if you could speak to specifically the ways that their sense of self is, how they're able to maintain, ways that they're able to maintain that, and then the ways that that's compromised, which you've spoken to already.
Maintaining their agency, that's a very...
There's a lot that works against that in, a, in an assisted living facility.
Yeah.
Disturb on the main entrance to their rooms, and yeah, so she doesn't feel like she has agency and privacy.
Yeah, I think one of the first ways that that came out was just trying to encourage them to take agency of the sacrament meeting structure, because initially that was what I was there for. Like, that was all I knew that I had agency of myself. And so the first thing I tried to do was then to give as much of that agency back to them of, what do you want? Like, picking out the hymns. Pick out the hymns. You know, people ask to be assigned topics in that way. And I would say that's the most direct thing that I've done, especially in a more official capacity. That's the thing that I've contributed to. And then when it comes to residents making the most of their agency elsewhere, yeah, I'd say it comes down to, like, kind of the things that we talked about, you know, like their space, like how they're choosing to decorate their space. It's one of the few acts of agency they have. I mean, this is kind of a bleak answer, but in some ways it's kind of a, that helps to put this in perspective of the struggles that they're going through, is that their agency is so limited. And I guess when you frame it in that way, it helps to center the needs there more. Sorry, I don't have a good answer for that one. All right. I mean, that's about all I have. So if there's anything else, I guess, even though we have 5 more minutes, but we might go ahead and wrap up or continue the conversation.
Just one more thought.
Yes.
I've tried to encourage my mother to see what kinds of things that she could contribute to her residents and to the other residents that she's living with. And in terms of church, she's come back to me and said, well, once she sort of got her bearings after a couple of months, she said, now I'm trying to talk with all the people that look really lonely after church, or before church, or in between the meetings. And I thought that was a great, great thing, because she's finally been able to take it upon herself to do something creative, to reach out.
Yeah.
And but she finds it very hard being in a sort of a bland environment where people are so ill, or their minds are so slowed down that there's not a lot going on intellectually, and she doesn't find that people can talk to her about her interests, you know, or they're not, they say hello and smile, but then that's it. So that's partly one of the things that she finds difficult in the spirituality of the meetings there, is that there's not that active.
Yeah, that's actually one thing that's come up with a few residents, especially the ones that are still have more of their mental acuity, is that there is that desire for, like, deeper spiritual conversations, like Sunday school sort of thing, but there is that sense of, who can I have it with? And they have, where we spend most of the time, it's like a much smaller group. It's about a dozen people, so it's different than here in that it's like it's not large enough to be its own branch. I've heard examples of branch, like just different centers being able to have their own branch, or even recently, there was a ward boundary switch, and then a larger facility moved into our ward boundaries, and that was large enough to have, like, a separate presidency that was just responsible for the goings-ons there, and they could have, there was enough people and enough people that weren't as high of needs that they could have, like, a modified Sunday school, but something similar to that structure. But when it's a smaller group, being able to have that connections, and finding people that they can connect to on that same plane is very difficult. So one of the things I just try to do is to provide that myself when I'm able to, but obviously that's very limited and something that it's not frequent to do. But that is a very good point of how people feel. And I often find that there is a natural tendency in a lot of the residents to check up on each other and to make sure that everyone is, there is a camaraderie sense to it of, you know, like, being able to see everyone, like, is this person doing okay? I didn't see them at sacrament meeting this week. It's like, and so that's kind of great that your mother sort of also fit into that. What would I call that? Mold as well. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.